Hey, Miranda. I am so excited to dig in today with our new political series of Francophone countries.
I'm so excited. You guys know, maybe, that I love politics and we love politics.
We're political junkies, I feel like. I think that's the label we really need to use.
I think so. I'm really excited because this first episode, we're going to get into what a parliamentary system is.
Yeah, so if you're curious on what the differences of a multi-party system is to a two-party system, if you want to know more about what bicameral means, or basically you want a prep course to get you ready to listen and observe the French news that's about to go on, here's your breakdown. And we're going to talk about a couple different Francophone countries. Miranda has a lot of experience with working in politics in Canada, so we're going to talk about the differences between Canada, France, and guess what? We talk about Germany, the UK, and Israel too. So Miranda, you want to kick us off and tell us a little bit more about your experience with politics?
Yeah, so when I first moved to Ottawa, I worked as a parliamentary intern on the Hill, as they call it, Parliamentary Hill. In Parliament, I got to see the sort of inner workings of how different parties work together to pass laws. And since then, I now work as an analyst on a parliamentary affairs team. So I spend a lot of time like thinking about Parliament and watching Parliament and doing all the nerdy stuff that nobody actually cares about. CPAC is actually my friend. CPAC is maybe not known to all of our listeners, but it is a very boring news show that just shows you live streams of what politicians talk about. And I watch those press conferences.
Well, it's like C-SPAN for Americans.
Yes, sorry, C-SPAN. Yes, exactly. CPAC is our version. So I have a decent understanding of the Canadian system at bare minimum. And we try to sort of talk about these other systems that are similar with little tweaks. And those little tweaks make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Always interesting to talk about the differences. So I'm super excited.
Yeah, I am too.
This is like my wheelhouse.
Yeah, let's get into it. I am pumped because exactly like you said, most of our personal conversations actually somehow bring up politics. I don't think we've gone through one conversation without a comment.
No.
So let's get into it. But before we get obsessed with political stuff, what are you drinking today?
I'm drinking a lemonade today, which is really nice. I know it's not like really the season for lemonade right now. I can see snow from out my window, but I love a lemonade. Don't you?
Yeah, actually, that's really funny because I'm having juice and I normally don't either, but I'm obsessed right now with the combination of orange juice and pineapple juice. It's just so refreshing.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. I feel like winter's getting to me. I'm trying
Sounds
to bring
lovely.
Spring too early.
Yeah.
You know, so we're on the same wavelength.
We're on the same page. Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm going to pass this to our Canadian in the office of parliamentary expertise because she is the person to ask for any parliamentary questions. What is a parliamentary system?
Yeah, so it's a complicated situation because France itself is a bit different. But essentially, a parliamentary system is directly elected officials who represent a specific constituency. Each one of those people exists in this house of parliament. The House of Commons is what it is in Canada. And in France, it's the Assemblée Nationale, mm-hmm. the National Assembly.
So would this be kind of like the House of Representatives for American listeners?
Yeah, it would be similar to the House of Representatives. The thing that is important is that you can be part of a party, but everybody within makes the decisions for the government, but you individually also represent your area. So similar to the House of Representatives, and the Prime Minister is the head of the government. And by government, I mean like sort of capital G, like the government that makes the laws, that changes legislation, that puts forward ideas.
And policies and all of that kind of stuff. So the basic operations of what a government structure can offer people.
Right. He directs the actions of the government. And so he has to also ensure the coordination of government action.
Some people might not even understand a multi-party system, because there are countries that just have two, like the United States, for example.
Right. And the funny thing is for North America as well, like European systems in general seem overwhelming. With the exception of the UK, a lot of like France and Germany and other countries have a lot of parties, like a lot, maybe like 10. That's a lot, right? And mm-hmm. in Canada, we basically have 5. And in the US, there's 2 that ever get elected to anything, right? So the situation we're looking at is that you need to be able to pass your laws with a majority of votes. You almost never have a majority of votes in the legislature because there are so many parties. So it's very rare that you can just pass whatever you want. It is possible, but usually you need to work with another party to ensure that your laws are able to get passed and have at least 50% of the House support. So you can do this formally through a coalition, and what that means is that you make assurances with each other that you will support the government on certain key initiatives as long as your key initiatives also get passed. So this is common in Germany, very common to have coalition governments. Mm-hmm. It has happened in the UK. It has never happened at the federal level in Canada. But we've been very close a couple times, and it has happened on the provincial level several times.
So basically, if we're talking about two parties that are right-leaning, mm-hmm. what you're saying is they would work together. So maybe one party that's on the right would have 30% of the seats in the National Assembly, mm-hmm. but they can't pass their agenda with only 30% right. of the vote. So in order to get that majority, they would need to then find someone with similar interests, but have to make some deals, maybe make a compromise. Right. And so you have maybe a party slightly farther to the right, and together they can make 45% of the vote, and then their negotiating power is bigger. Yes. Is that basically how?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And so a coalition is a formalized version of that. A coalition is saying, okay, I'm the president and I am part of, you know, and they can do this through, you know, the president is one party, the prime minister is a different party, and there's a sort of coalition between the two parties to pass laws that they, you know, generally agree on the same kind of principles and ideas and direction for the country. There's also informal ways of doing that. So, for example, recently in Canada, we had a lot of COVID supports that had to be passed, and the Conservatives were not going to support them. And the NDP, who is a left-leaning party to the current Liberal government, they decided to support it, but only if we added in sick days, so paid sick leave. So they added in what they wanted, and with that caveat, they would vote for the legislation which passed the House. So you need at least 50%. The Liberals are very close to a majority now, so they only ever need like one party usually to support them. So it just depends on what the breakdown is. In parliaments with multiple parties, it just becomes very complicated. You usually need the support of more than one party because most likely a larger party maybe has a different view of the world than you do, meaning the bigger parties disagree more fundamentally, and the smaller parties sort of fall under the umbrella of left-wing, right-wing, centrist.
So in America, there's a lot of debate on, you have your extreme left candidates, you have your middle left, you have your mm-hmm. progressives, you have your centrists, but they're all on the left. So really what you're saying is the same type of conversations are occurring, it's just they're already under the umbrella of Democrat, per se. But really, progressives are very different than a centrist Democrat from West Virginia who refuses to get legislation. So what basically the parliamentary system is doing is just distinguishing them into smaller parties and letting them work under whatever umbrella that they choose to do so.
Yeah, exactly. There are pros and cons to this, in my opinion. So for example, there's an issue right now in Canadian politics that exists, which is that the Conservative Party gets about 30% of the vote pretty much consistently throughout elections. 30% is not enough to win a majority, obviously. And it's not always enough to win government. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. The rest of the parties are pretty left-leaning. So there is an argument that the parliamentary system breaks up what is overwhelmingly a position of the country. The sort of everyone is more left-leaning. Now, that's not totally true of Canada. That's not exactly accurate. But in general, there are pros and cons, because the pro is that, yeah, you can vote. The left wing is more complicated than what one single party can embody. And so is the right wing. You know, you have people that are fiscal conservatives and social liberals and consider themselves to be on the right wing. They are not embodied by, you know, the extreme right that is extremely socially right and extremely fiscally right wing as well. So there's a good thing in the sense that you get more specificity. You don't have to say, yeah, I vote for this party, which maybe I agree with 60% of what they're trying to do. You can vote for a party that you really understand and get behind their policies. The other issue is that you can sort of split the vote many ways because you end up having maybe 60% of the country voting for a left-wing party, but in the form of three different parties. So it's complicated. Right. There are pros and cons to both, but I do generally think that having two parties is a really small political sphere.
You have to make more sacrifices
of completely
your pros and cons lists. Okay. And following up on that, another question I have for the parliamentary system as a whole is, at least in Canada or the UK system, how is the Prime Minister chosen? Is he elected or is she designated? Is it because they hold a position or role within the government, or like in the case of France, are they nominated by someone else? What's the usual system, at least in the English version of parliamentary system?
Yeah, that's a great question. So essentially, they are also nominated in a way. In the British parliamentary system, which is the same system that Canada follows, they are the leader of the party that wins power. For example, the Liberal Party of Canada wins government. They win the most seats in the House. They win government, and the leader of that party becomes the Prime Minister. It's sort of a de facto thing. The person has to represent something. So Justin Trudeau does actually represent a riding.
And a riding would be an area of the country.
Smaller area. Yes. It's usually around 100,000 people, but it depends on where you live. In Toronto, that's about 100,000.
Yeah. Well, Canada is a very unique example because the country is massive, yeah, but the population is really small. So yes, that's why it would probably be based on population and not land size, whereas it's kind of the opposite in the US. We do it by land size, not by population, which again is a very interesting question to address.
Yes.
In a non-related Francophone podcast.
Yes, there are. It's very interesting. But so in a sense, they are nominated. But the difference that you have between the Prime Minister in France and the Prime Minister in Canada is that the Prime Minister in France is not someone you directly vote for.
You might have no idea who's going to be nominated. Exactly. Whereas in the UK, if you're voting for a certain party, you know that Boris Johnson is the head of that party and that is who will be
into the next year. Know that if you're voting Conservative, you are voting for Boris Johnson to be the Prime Minister. And similarly, if you're voting Liberal, you know that you are voting for Justin Trudeau to be the Prime Minister. The only other thing I wanted to mention about the parliamentary system, which is similar in France and Canada, but is different in the United States, is cabinet. So cabinet ministers are sort of heads of specific areas of policy, like the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Health, Minister of Sport in Canada. Each minister has to be elected. So they also represent an area of Canada, in addition to being in this elevated status of being a minister. In the U.S., it's not that way.
Right. Anthony Blinken does not represent a congressional district in New York. He is just the Secretary of State. But they hold a similar role in a governmental cabinet.
Yeah, they're responsible for a ministerial department. So, for example, when we were assistant de langue, we were technically employed by the Ministry of Education. So there's a minister for that.
Yes, we were. We were fonctionnaires.
So in that way, it's what it is supposed to be, and this will, I will hold my opinions to myself, but it is supposed to be is that the Prime Minister sort of delegates an amount of responsibility to these ministers to be in charge of a ministry. And that is one of the ways that you can, like, run a government of, you know, a lot of competing and important things that need to happen at the same time. One person cannot do that. Mm-hmm. And one person should not do that. It should be sort of delegated amongst people.
Yeah. So to wrap up the conversation on parliamentary systems around the world, including France, Canada, the UK, there are also other parliamentary systems that are more modern, like in Israel, for example, that was created by political scientists to try to make improvements on older political systems. For instance, we've already talked about a dual executive. We've talked about the UK and Canada. But as a parliamentary expert, do you see big differences between them, or are there different words or names that classify these systems?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the biggest thing in Israel is it is it uses representative democracy. So what that means is the vote share is more accurately represented than individuals. It's a little bit complicated, but essentially there's a difference between the overall votes that a party receives in the country and the amount of people who win in each specific area. So you can actually have broad-based support across the country and not ever elect anybody. A million people could vote for your party across the country, and yet if that isn't concentrated in any area, you would have no representation.
So maybe the Greens would be a good
example. Yeah, the Green Party is a good example in Canada. Unfortunately, there's also a very right-wing party that's an example in Canada, which is called the People's Party. And they had about 6% of the vote last election, but thankfully won no specific riding. So that's one of the other ways that you can see that. There are pros and cons, but in general, it's not necessarily representative of what all of Canadians think and feel. And it depends really strongly on like how you can win in your specific area, which is something that the US struggles with as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that the state is one way. If your district votes, you know, interestingly or differently, or is split on a different issue, you have to run to that issue or to that problem to be elected in that area. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we haven't discussed is France's bicameral system, which basically just means that the legislative branch, we're really going into specifics on this, but back to the civics class, there are three branches of government. There's the executive, who is the head of state. There is the legislative, where they pass laws, and there's the judicial, like the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. The legislative is split into two. So that means there's there's Parliament, and then there is the Senate. Now, the Senate is supposed to be sort of in Canada, we always say it's the sober second thought. I don't know if you use that as well in the States, but it's essentially supposed to be a second look at any legislation before it becomes law to make sure that it's not overly partisan, mm-hmm. overly political. In France, the Senate is elected indirectly. I wouldn't even say elected, because they're basically chosen.
They're chosen. I think that's, yeah, I think the easiest way for indirect elections is to think it as they are chosen by peers, yes. essentially. I think that's the easiest way to say it. We're going to get more into this in the next mm-hmm. episode on specifics of the French case. But for now, just think of it as it's not a direct right. vote. It is chosen by people who are voted for. For instance, in the US system, it'd be like the Speaker of the House. No one votes for the Speaker of the House. That is an important role, but the elected officials vote for who should be the Speaker of the House.
Exactly. I think the important part about knowing about that system, which both France and the US and Canada share, is that actually it's only about 40% of countries that have a bicameral system. So it's common in North America, certainly, and in areas of Europe, but it's not a foregone conclusion when we're talking about parliamentary systems.
And so bicameral means you have a house and you have a Senate.
Right.
Whether it's Parliament, whether it's the House of Representatives, you have two distinct legislative bodies that yes. have similar but slightly different roles.
Exactly. And and in Canada, there was a strong movement for a while to eliminate the Senate or abolish the Senate, because in Canada, they're even less fairly distributed. There are no term limits, unlike France, where there are term limits. They're not indirectly picked. They're appointed by whoever the prime minister is, and then they can be in the Senate forever. No, the joke around Ottawa is that is the job that you want. You want to work for 10 years in politics and then be appointed to be a senator and make $170,000 until you die. So,
wow.
That would be the gig.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that because of the history? As you mentioned earlier in this episode, each country's history really reflects its political system. So that seems to me very similar to the House of Lords in the UK, which, again, not elected. In that case, it used to be they were born into it. And they just, because of who they are, they get to be in the House of Lords.
Yes. And I think it comes less from the class system that it's based in the UK and more from the idea that there should be someone who is not related to an election at all. Like the sober, sober part of the sober second thought is that there's no relation to an election. However, I would argue that in practice, if you are appointed by a political leader, you are political in some way. So I don't know that that totally tracks, but it is the sort of basis idea is that there are people who are not, they don't have to report to the public. And in doing so, they can have a less biased view.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we're going to leave that there for right now. And we're going to get more into the nitty gritty of France and its political system. But we thought, let's start with an overview of parliamentary systems for the people that don't know what that means. A lot of our listeners are from countries that don't have parliamentary systems, according to our data. So here's your brief overview. If you are from a country that we discussed and you think it was unfairly represented in our very brief mentionings like the UK or Israel, we apologize. Yes, there are so much complexities. We could go on about this for semesters.
Yes.
I know my professors would be disappointed that we summarized basically his entire life's work into one sentence, but we got to do what we got to do. So hopefully this was helpful, and we'll see you next time on the French parliamentary system and the Fifth Republic.
Bye.
Salut.